Welcome in to the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Bucks, Suns, and Knicks. And I'm joined alongside Bruce Bernstein, our four-time Emmy Award winner, who spent more than three decades at ESPN producing NBA shows, SportsCenter, and soaking up knowledge from the best hoop analysts in the business. And we're also joined by two-time Emmy Award winner, Michael Worldby Freer, who is a senior writer at Stat Factor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. This is an Eastern Conference Finals special edition of the show, as we just finished watching a Game 1 overtime thriller in Boston between the Pacers and Celtics. But before we get any further, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on the game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use our promo code BLEAV, that is B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. And, well, let's start with this, fellas. The Celtics held the lead for the majority of tonight's game, yet in the final minutes, they became the team to fight back with the help of some really costly turnovers by the Pacers, ended up forcing overtime, and ended up taking care of business 133-128. Bruce, I'm shocked you're still with us here. I thought you might have had a heart attack here tonight. I'm glad that was not the case, but before we kind of break things down from start to finish, you know, how are you feeling right now?
There was never any doubt they were going to. No, it was like, when they jumped out to that 12-0 lead, I think they started thinking, okay, we got these guys, right? And so slowly but surely, Indiana got back in there. And then it was a dogfight. I mean, at halftime, it was tied. It was just a dogfight. I mean, I said when we previewed this series, I thought Boston would win in six, and I said I would not be shocked if it went seven, and nothing that I saw on Tuesday night makes me change my mind about that. Indiana is a really, really good team, and oh, by the way, they played some serious defense tonight. I know there was a lot of points scored, but they were super aggressive.
Yeah, and World B, now starting at the beginning of this game, of course, Boston came out rolling. Got off to a 12-0 start in this one. It seemed like it was going to be a long game for the Indiana Pacers. But then we saw one of your old friends, Obi Toppin, come in off the bench for the Indiana Pacers. Had a nice first quarter. I believe he finished with 8 points in the first quarter alone. What were your overall thoughts with just the Pacers as far as their fight in tonight's game, and especially, you know, from quarter to quarter?
Well, you know, the funny thing was at the start of the game, as Bruce mentioned, when the Celtics got out the early lead, it looked like one of these games where you think, you know what, they just got through a tough series. Game seven was 48 hours ago. They have to go back on the road. This is the throwaway game, and they're just going to, you know, you expect that kind of outcome. And you know what? The depth of Indiana is going to be a problem, clearly, in this series. They can throw a lot of guys, a lot of quality guys at you off the bench, and play as hard. You know, their defense, as Bruce mentioned, they wasn't just the Knicks where they pick up 94 feet. They're picking the Celtics up at 94 feet. They're determined to, this is the way we're going to do it. And you guys know it's, I don't want to say it's the NBA, but these guys know how to adjust. These coaches know how to adjust. These guys know, you know what, we got to make a shot or two. We'll get a basket. We'll or get a stop. We'll come down, score a basket. And all of a sudden, we're back in it. And that's what happened. It was a gradual thing. But by the end of the quarter, it was exactly, you know, just a three-point game. And here is the shootout that we thought it was going to be. A lot of points in this series. We thought it kind of slowed down after that. But, yeah, it was looking like Indiana was going to have a throwaway game for game one. And, obviously, they had other ideas.
No doubt about that. And obviously, Bruce, when it came to Boston straight out of the gates, it looked like they might get everything they wanted offensively. But then that bench unit came in for Indiana. And we had talked about in our preview of this series just the depth that Indiana has. And they got some solid contributions, not just from Obi Toppin, but also from TJ McConnell. Do you see that being a concern for the Celtics moving forward as far as just how wide they can extend their bench and some of the tools they have for Rick Carlisle to turn to?
Yeah, I mean, look, as the series goes on, Boston's bench, other than Peyton Pritchard, didn't really give them much of anything on Tuesday night. And as you said, I mean, between Toppin and McConnell, and I've always compared Pritchard to McConnell. I always said he's kind of a poor man's TJ McConnell. And he was kind of that guy tonight. But, I mean, the real TJ McConnell is still a real threat. He always kills Boston. Apparently, he kills every team. But, I see him against Boston, I just think, they've never figured out that riddle. I mean, their best play was when somebody like set a screen on him and knocked him to the floor, and he had to come out of the game for a couple minutes. I think that was Sam Hauser who nailed him on that screen. Look, they've got young legs. They're one of the youngest teams in the league, right? And they've got a great coach, and they had a great game plan. I mean, look, nobody expected them to win the game tonight, but with a minute left in the fourth quarter, you were thinking, they got this.
Yeah, and a lot of that early success came from Miles Turner, Bruce. What were some of your thoughts and what you saw from Turner here, and how do you see the Celtics looking to watch the tape and kind of slow him down early? Because he got going fast.
I mean, he had 18 points at halftime, right? And I think he finished with 23. So it's like, he was absolutely torching Boston in the first half. But then in the second half, it's almost like they stopped giving him the ball. I didn't see anybody on Boston shutting him down. I mean, Al Horford, as much as I love the guy, he didn't have his best game tonight. I mean, he was struggling on defense. He also had to play 40 minutes, which is about 13 or 14 more than you want Al Horford, playing. Okay, of course, overtime changes things. But I was disappointed that Indiana decided, not disappointed as a Celtics fan. I was happy.
Surprised.
Because Turner, I mean, he was making threes. He was doing what he did against the Knicks. He was making threes. He was dunking. And then all of a sudden it was like, it became just totally like, guard oriented. And then Siakam late. Siakam, came on strong in the second half in overtime.
Yep. And World B, early on in that first half, it certainly appeared watching the Pacers defense that they were kind of leaving Horford a little bit more open, especially out on the perimeter, kind of deciding he was the least worst option as far as, results are concerned, and trying to really shut down Tatum and Jaylen Brown there early. But not only did Horford kind of, get his touches, but how about Drew Holiday tonight?
Absolutely. What a star he was tonight. We talked to me, Bruce mentioned in our preview podcast how Holiday and White were going to be lockdown defenders. And Holiday did at both ends tonight. He came up with an unbelievable offensive effort for him, 28 points, four threes. One of the few guys out there that was draining threes, but they did not get much in perimeter from Horford, from Tatum, and from Brown until late in the game, but they did not get a whole lot there. And really, he, you don't want to say he was a savior, but he was as close to the savior for Boston in this game as you could ask, which, by the way, is exactly one advantage that Boston has over really the rest of the league. But their unit, their starting unit, can really – where are you going to go? It's really hard to stop all five guys, really four – and when Porzingis ever comes back, now you got five guys to deal with, really put a threat. That's a lot to ask for a defense.
I remember when our show forced the Bucks to make the Damian Lillard trade to play Kate Giannis. I remember saying at the time, they got to get Drew Holiday from Portland. Portland's not going to want this guy. And the reason that I wanted them to get him was exactly the kind of game that he played tonight. And I'm not even just talking about the points. The points were total like cherry on top. It was just everything else. I mean, his decision-making, his ability to kind of handle the ball and not turn the ball over too much. I mean, he did have four turnovers, but he also had eight assists. But just how many loose balls did he get his hands on? When we talked about that Halliburton turnover, towards the end, that was Holiday, kind of squeezing him up against the sideline that caused that. It's the things like that don't show up in the box score. And a lot of the people, the pundits out there that talk about the Celtics and You know, they treat them as if they're the same Celtics team last year. But the Drew Holiday upgrade over Marcus Smart, you know, tonight you saw why, you know, we wanted Drew Holiday on this team.
Yeah, I think Drew really early on kind of noticed and took advantage of the Pacers' defensive game plan as far as, you know, we're really going to try to keep Jaylen Brown, the two J's, Jaylen and Jason, a little bit quieter. And I'll just be fully aggressive here and take advantage of the opportunity. And boy, did he do that. So one thing for you, Bruce, on Jason Tatum, of course, you know, he had his stretches or his opportunities down the stretch there to really, you know, make some big time plays and kind of, you know, blundered the moment a little bit. He had a costly turnover down the stretch off a pick and roll that was stolen by Tyrese Haliburton. Had a chance to tie the game up at the top of the key. Any concerns with Tatum, or do you think this is one that you shake off a game one and he'll be much better in the clutch down the stretch of the rest of the series?
I mean, I was disappointed in some of his turnovers and even a couple of his decisions. There was one point where Derek White missed a layup in close, and they needed – they were down three at the time. It was late in the game. And Tatum got the rebound, and if you look – Holiday was open behind the three-point line if Tatum would have kicked it out, but instead he put up a two back again. And I'm watching the game with my wife, and Nancy says, what's he doing? You know, they need a three here. So yeah. It was like – it was a questionable decision. And – but, you know, look, when the final script is written – the guy had 12 rebounds, okay? He played 46 minutes. He has the ball in his hands a lot. He still has a tendency, I think, to dribble the ball a little bit too much and to play a little bit more one-on-one. But, you know, he did make that big three that gave him a little bit of breathing room in overtime. That yes, was a big did. Shot. That was kind of yeah. like the dagger shot almost. So, you know, the only concerns about him are that, you know, he just – you know, just do your thing. I mean, you know, the guy who really, you know, besides Holiday, I mean, Jaylen Brown was the star tonight. I don't care that Tatum had more points. It was Jaylen Brown's game tonight.
And speaking of Jaylen Brown, World B, I had thought after Nembhard hit that right elbow jumper from mid-range to put the Pacers up five very late in that fourth quarter, that was going to seal the deal. Of course, they went ahead and turned the ball over a couple of times, which led to Jaylen Brown getting an opportunity there in the corner against Pascal Siakam. Do you think that was a situation where Siakam had a chance to foul and make it a two-shot penalty rather than give Brown the three ball, or was it too quick for him to make a decision like that?
I think he should have fouled. I think there was an opportunity. If you watch the video, Brown kind of gave a pump fake before he finally took up his three. At that point, if you're not going to foul on the pump fake, it's too late. You're not going to do it at that point. He got screened off. He got a little late there because he got screened to get there. So it was a good setup by Boston. But you had an opportunity. There's absolutely, to me, no excuse not to foul up three. You can't – how can you give them a shot? The team that takes more threes than anybody in the league – and normally, tonight notwithstanding, makes more than anybody. How do you not foul up three? It's inexcusable to me, and it was really one of the key elements and why they lost. That game is basically over if they foul on the three.
Bruce, were you surprised that the Pacers elected not to foul in that situation?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, because to me it was, you know, there was not a whole lot of time left in the game. It was, and timeouts were pretty much used up, I think, at that point. So there wasn't really any way to advance the ball or do anything. So, yeah, I was surprised. And, you know, and I agree with World B. I mean, Siakam was there, and it's almost was like he was making sure he didn't foul, looking at his body language there, as opposed to a two-hand shove before he got the shot off. I mean, you know, that would have sealed the game for them. I mean, you know, you don't expect Rick Carlisle teams to you know, make mental mistakes like that, but it was.
Yeah, mental mistakes. By the way, they had a couple
22
of those.
Turnovers, yeah. 22 turnovers by Indiana, leading to 32 Boston points off turnovers. That's – you're not going to win too many games. You're certainly not going to beat the best team in the league in their own building if you give it up that many times. And that's what happened tonight. I know they had a shot to win, and I'm not going to say they should have won, but they had an absolutely good chance to win that game. Too much sloppy play, bad decision-making on the foul at the end, and, you know, we talked about before we went on, the last play that the Pacers had in regulation was a little suspect, we'll just say.
I have a question for you guys, because one of the things throughout the game, and the announcers kind of started talking about it, you know, late, the discrepancy in free throw opportunities. I mean, Boston had 30 opportunities, and I believe Indiana had 10, okay? And usually the aggressive team gets rewarded by the referees, and I thought Indiana was the more aggressive team tonight. Now, maybe a bit overly aggressive. I don't know that any of the fouls were not legitimate calls. But what did you guys think about? I mean, do you feel like, you know, that's, you know, Rick Carlisle's going to have another, have some more to say about that? Or do you feel that it was just sort of like, did anything seem egregious to you as far as no calls versus the whistles?
I didn't see anything too egregious here tonight. I thought it was, at least as far as shooting fouls are concerned, there wasn't anything that I've got any beef with the officials calling a foul one way or the other. I just think Boston, you know, down the stretch there especially, you know, was the more aggressive team, playing with a little bit more urgency, not settling for tough three-point shots as we saw the Pacers do late in the overtime there. I didn't really see anything with that. But just going back to what World B brought up with the final shot of regulation where the Pacers did have a chance to win the game at the buzzer, I clearly thought right out of the sideline, out of bounds play, Tyrese Haliburton caught it and had his cleanest window of opportunity to get a three off of with like 4.6 seconds left. I don't even know if there'd be enough time for Boston to corral the rebound and even throw a shot up. I thought he should have taken that shot. I mean, obviously he elected not to, and then the clamp defense of Boston on the perimeter made it almost impossible for him to even throw up a prayer. I mean, what was your thoughts on that, Bruce? I mean, watching that as the Celtics fan and seeing Haliburton have that space, yes, it would have been a deep three, but boy, you had to probably count your blessings that he decided to continue to dribble around the perimeter there and allowed your defense to get established.
I mean, he had a really nice night shooting threes. I mean, he was 6 of 14. I mean, that's a really good percentage. And if I remember, he made one from the logo. I forget which one that there was.
He did,
so yeah. It's like, you know, his shot was clean. I mean, you know, and he chose not to take it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that was one of the perhaps, you know, questionable decisions by them. But, you know, he's still, you know, when you face the kind of relentless defense that he was seeing all night, and he played really well, but when you have to go through that meat grinder with, you know, with Derek White and with Holiday and with even Jaylen Brown checking you once in a while, that's got to take its toll on guys. I mean, those guys are all really great defensive players.
Yeah. And
to your point, Ross, excuse me.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to your point, what you said before about, you know, it being a long, potentially an open three for Haliburton, but a long three-pointer. They're basically in this situation, the conference finals, because Nesmith hit a 30-foot three in game three when they were in danger of going down 3-0, and he sank a 30-footer in the Knicks' face to put him in there. So it's not unprecedented for these guys to take and make long shots. My biggest beef wasn't as much as I can question that last shot by Haliburton. It was a shot he took with under a minute to go and a 3-point lead really early in the shot clock that turned out to be a brick. And that was the bigger of the misses for him down the stretch, because that was just poor clock execution. You got to wind that thing down when you have the lead and you got the ball in your hands. And he took one way too early in the shot clock. Boston gets the rebound and, you know, everything kind of fell apart from Indiana in that final minute, beginning with that ill-advised shot.
Hey, Ross, as a coach, right, you know, you've been in locker rooms, you know, we haven't, okay, as far as, you know. So for a young team like Indiana now, they got to come back on Thursday night and they got to, you know, do it again. They've got to know, when they look at film on Wednesday, they're going to be, you know, I'm sure Carlisle's going to, you know, have lots of feedback for them about some of the stuff.
Most definitely.
Is this got a potential to carry over on a young team where they're going to feel like, shoot, we really had our chance? Or do you feel that this group, you know, can a young team be resilient enough where they can just say, you know what, we screwed up, but we were supposed to lose game one, you know, next?
I think they're going to be resilient. I think they now feel like they have a chance in this series. I think Boston really opened up the door for them. Like, hey, we can play with these guys. I mean, certainly with what happened tonight, we had a chance to put the game away in four quarters. We fought all the way back, hung tight for, you know, three of the four quarters. Obviously, the first was a challenging one, but every other quarter was extremely tight, and they had the lead at the end there. So I think Indiana, despite being disappointed that they let this one fall through the cracks, has more hope, has more optimism going into game two and beyond, especially once they get back home to Indiana. I mean, it's going to be a tough place to play in Boston. They certainly knew that, which is, again, going to World Beast point of taking that three-pointer, a Halliburton, early in the shot clock on the road like that. Extremely tough to take that. You better make it if you're going to do that.
By the way, they have a good game plan, Indiana does, to stay in this series. They had 38 assists in this game on 53 field goals. That's a really impressive number. This is a team that led the NBA in passes per game during the regular season and during the postseason. They passed, they moved the ball really well. They put Boston on their heels defensively, or any opponent on their heels defensively, and forced them to switch, to force them to do whatever, play out of their element defense. You can't just stand there and play one guy because the ball is moving and people are cutting. And so I think that is a really good recipe for success for Nia. They proved it the way they were able to come back and take control of this game for a while. They just were sloppy from start to finish, but in the end they were sloppy, and that cost them. They can clean that up. Professional athletes, to me, are the most amazing. One of the most amazing things about professional athletes is their ability to shake these games off, both positive and negative, and look ahead. Maybe it's sting. They're not fans. The fans and us and everything, they'll sting with us. If you're an Indiana Pacer fan, you're disappointed. It's going to carry over to tomorrow. It's going to carry over into Thursday. Ball players don't do that. Ball players are able to – it stings tonight, and now let's get it out of our system and come back. There's so many cases, you know, examples of shaking it off and coming back the next game. It's hard to, you know, even – you know, fathom how many there are, but ball players are a different breed where that's concerned.
Yeah, and speaking of ball players, I'm sure you both noticed it as well, but Bruce, being our Celtics fan here on the show, did you notice how much of a chip was on the shoulder of Aaron Nesmith? I mean, Nesmith looked like he relished the opportunity to guard Tatum all night, and he's got a point to make, right? I mean, that's motivation for him. Obviously, Boston traded him. He never really got a chance to break the rotation off the bench in Boston, and he's become quite a player in that Indiana rotation. And he played a big role tonight. Obviously, you know, I think he only scored like 14 points, but he played lockdown defense most of the night, had a big play down the stretch with an and one opportunity, getting to the rack and finishing that one off and getting to the foul line. Aaron Nesmith, I mean, sure seems to be playing with a chip on his shoulder, and it's kind of fun to watch even as a Celtics fan, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, when he was in Boston, he was only there for two seasons. He was always a guy who played really hard. I mean, they drafted him because they thought he was going to be a really good, you know, outside shooter. And it turns out that, you know, his real specialty is you know, defense. And maybe as he gets a little bit older, his shot's going to fall and he could develop into a really outstanding 3-and-D guy. But yeah, I mean, when he was in Boston, I really enjoyed watching him play because he would throw his body on the floor after loose balls. I mean, he was, he gave it all when he played there.
He definitely did. So as we close out tonight's special edition of the 48 Minutes podcast, as we break down game one, what are we expecting in game two, Bruce? Got any predictions or insights?
Well, in the first series against Miami, Boston took game one at home, lost game two at home. All right. Yep. Against Cleveland, they won game one at home, lost game two at home. Now they've won game one at home. this time they're not going to lose game two at home. Boston's going to win game two. And I'm not saying it won't be a close, hard-fought game, but Boston will win game two.
This was a wake-up call. That's what Bruce is calling right here. So, World B, what's your thoughts on game two?
I don't see a scenario in which Jason and Jalen, are that bad from perimeter again. I think Indiana's defense played really well tonight for most of the game. I haven't seen them put two. Although I will say this, they've really done a good job, Indiana, from about midway through the Knicks series on, of playing good defense. So maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. They've been playing good defense of late. This is the best offensive team we've seen efficiency-wise in the history of the league. Shutting them down for two straight games on their home court, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with you both. I think Boston takes game two, but like Bruce suggested, I think this is going to be a battle-fought win for Boston. I mean, you look at this Indiana team, they got through the Bucks. Yes, the Bucks were shorthanded, but that was a good team, second in the East, and then they had to go play the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. So this is a team that's been exposed to big-time pressure situations against some of the best teams in the NBA this year. They've gotten past two of them. I don't think they're afraid to play the Celtics. They certainly showed that here tonight, and I think we're in for a fun series. Even if this goes five, I think it's going to be an absolute dogfight.
I agree.
So with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you tomorrow night for another Game 1 recap in the Western Conference as the Dallas Mavericks take on the Minnesota Timberwolves. That should be another fun one to discuss, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night right here on 48 Minutes.